listening to a podcast from The National.
Only four matches remain of the 2018 World Cup, and by Sunday evening, we'll know which nation has been crowned champions. France and Belgium square off in the first semi-final on Tuesday, with the winner awaiting Wednesday's clash between Croatia and England. Both games kick off at 10 p.m. UAE time. In this Extra Time podcast, we'll be looking ahead to the semi-finals, looking at the standout stars, subplots and strategies that could decide the outcomes. My name is John Turner, joining me in the studio this week, Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
How are you?
Very well, yourself?
Not too bad. You're still glowing after your TV debut.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking, but nice to get on there. Nice to get some predictions, right?
As yeah, well. I thought you did very well.
Thank you.
Very well. I said there's four games. There's three of real significance. The fourth is, of course, the third, fourth playoff. We don't have to worry about that.
No.
So let's discuss the first semi-final. I suppose let's do it in chronological order. France and Belgium. Should be a bit of a humdinger, that, shouldn't it?
It really should. Again, and much like Belgium's game against Brazil in the previous round, you know, the kind of billing that could easily be a final. Unfortunately, we're going to have to say goodbye to one of the two teams. And, you know, it's... France was so commanding, weren't they, in their game against Uruguay. Never really troubled. And Belgium just put on an absolute masterclass against Brazil. I think... the tactics and the way Roberto Martinez set up his team in that game was just formidable. You know, he's a bit of a punchline, isn't he, in English Premier League circles for the job he did at Everton. But yeah, he's massively rebuilt his career in Belgium. What is it now, 25 games undefeated? That number keeps changing every week for me. But yeah, it's a very high number. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a cracking game. This is what semi-finals are all about, isn't it? The two heavyweights going at each other, hammer and tongs. Who will emerge the winner?
That's it. Belgium have been probably the most consistently impressive team all tournament, but France have kind of reached that level now, haven't they? Found a bit of momentum in the knockout stages after being pretty ordinary, really, in the group stages. So it looks like they're both kind of hitting what would kind of like peak performance at about the right time.
Yeah, definitely, which makes it even more intriguing. You know, there's been no scraping through a la Croatia, which obviously we'll come to afterwards. You know, they largely underwhelmed in the group phase, probably, you know, did an efficient job to get the job done and see it through. But yeah, their game against Argentina obviously was one of the highlights of the tournament. Like I said, against Uruguay, never really troubled, never really turned on the afterburners, but never really had to. The stat during the rounds is Luis Suarez never had a shot or a touch in France's penalty area, which obviously tells its own story. I mean, both sides are just packed full of talent. France are very top heavy, much like Belgium as well. Haven't really been tested at the back. And unlike Belgium, who were tested against Japan and obviously coming up against Brazil, I just wonder if maybe France are going into this game a little undercooked.
Defensively,
yeah. Yeah, I think, well, yeah, definitely. But I just wonder if, you know, how Argentina scored three goals against them still blows my mind, yeah, because a bang average Argentina team. I just feel like Belgium have been asked the question and they've answered it in all of their games so far. I'm the kind of guy that say I told you so, as you know. Predicted they would be Belgium, and I see them just edging this game. I wonder what formation, how he'll line up his attacking front three, Martinez, for this game. Obviously a masterstroke playing Lukaku wide right up against Miranda in the game against Brazil. De Bruyne are pushing on as a kind of further forward, false nine almost. And bringing in Marouane Fellaini as well, you know, just and what a superb game he had in that match.
Yeah.
That's the most towering performance from him in any kind of shirt, Everton, Manchester United and Belgium. He was epic in that game.
Well, look, we'll get on to the standout stars in just a second, but when you look at the two teams, the semi-finals is minimum expectation from both of them, surely, in terms of within the camp, the media, fans back home. You would have thought semi-finals for both of these teams, it was... as a minimum of what they should expect, compared to, as we'll get onto the other semi-final in a bit, the semi-finals has kind of surpassed expectations.
Yes, yeah, I think that has absolutely hit the nail on the head. I think the France Football Federation kind of I don't know if they said it publicly, but very strongly alluded to that a semi-final with this French team, with the talent that it has in it, was the bare minimum. And France have done that quite comfortably. And Belgium, as you say, we're forever going on about their golden generation of stars. Obviously, Eden Hazard, Kevin De Bruyne, you know, the defence packed with the likes of Vincent Kompany, Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen. You know, and they've so often failed to deliver on this stage. And they've, for me, they've been the most impressive team in this World Cup. So, yeah, you know, and I guess if semi-finals was the bare minimum required by the football associations and the fans, that, you know, one of them is now going to exceed expectations.
Two teams packed with star players. Who do you see could be the kind of standout stars that could decide this game, or key players in key areas of the pitch that could play a telling role on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, I think if we look at France first, I mean, you know, the player that everyone is talking about, obviously, is Kylian Mbappe. Had a relatively quiet game against Uruguay, but, I mean, he's shown in purple patches against the likes of Argentina just what devastating pace he has, and he will terrorise the best defenders on the planet with that pace. So, I mean, he's definitely going to be key. But I think a guy that, you know, so often we've spoken about in the past on our Premier League podcast, who's largely gone under the radar here, but it cannot be overstated what a fantastic screening job he does, and N'Golo Kanté.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just been phenomenal in this World Cup. The amount of ground that he covers, the amount of intercepts, the amount of tackles, it's just frightening. You know, if every team would want, and, you know, all these superstars, Neymar, Ronaldo, Messi, every team needs an N'Golo Kanté in their team. For me, he's been every bit as good as Kylian Mbappé.
Especially coming up against Kevin De Bruyne, that he'll have a tough job, but one that he's proved that he can handle in the past.
Yeah.
And if you can nullify Kevin De Bruyne, then not half a job done, but a significant part of the mission to beat Belgium is out of the way there.
Yeah, and I mean, and looking at that Belgium side, as you say, if you can nullify one, you've still got to worry about the likes of Lukaku, who's on 4 goals for the tournament. Eden Hazard, who I thought in the Brazil game was fantastic. There was one incident just a couple of minutes from the end of the time where he took the ball down on his chest. Obviously, his defence is under the cosh. Brazil really going for it. He took the ball on his chest, turned away from the midfielder, drew the foul. And you know what? For me, that was as good as any of the goals.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're worth. In those types of situations, those are exactly what your team needs. Your defence need a break. You need to push up and pen Brazil back. And I think that applies to Lukaku largely as well. We saw him start wide on the right, but the way he brushed off a couple of defenders and fed De Bruyne for his goal, and what a goal was. And that's something that everyone has been demanding of Lukaku, and I think that's a massive part of his game that's improved at Manchester United. I know Jose Mourinho takes quite a lot of flack for not improving or not developing players, but I think you can see it in Lukaku. If you compare 2016-17 version to present-day Lukaku, there's a massive improvement in his stand-up game and the way he holds the ball up.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you consider him like an elite-level striker now?
Yeah, I think he's there now. I think you look at his goals record, you know, what he's already Belgium's record goal scorer, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he's, what, 24, 25? You know, yeah. So he's going to double that potentially, what his goals tally now. So, yeah, I think he's moved into that bracket now. But obviously, there is a huge game ahead, potentially two huge games ahead. And critics will look to him if he doesn't produce in these two games.
Both teams look very well balanced. Both teams, there's no real clear weaknesses. Both are strong through the middle with pace and power. But where does France get at Belgium, and how does Belgium get at France? I mean, there has to be a winner. What do you see? Are there areas that you could see France targeting Belgium and then vice versa? What?
Well, if there's one area I think you can target of Belgium based on the games that we've seen at this World Cup is their defence. I mean, as the guys have already mentioned, Kompany, Alderweireld and Vertonghen, I mean, that is some mean defence. I mean, that is almost a dream team lineup, but they've not really looked that assured. I know Boyata was in ahead of Kompany in the first few group games, but they've not looked the kind of reassuring, commanding figures that they are undoubtedly for their club sides.
Is that because they're missing like an N'Golo Kante in front of them?
Yeah, it could
be. Of someone of that ilk, at least.
It could be, you know, and obviously just wax lyrical about Fellaini, but I thought Axel Witsel, who I've always struggled to see what the big deal with him was, but I thought, again, he was tremendous against Brazil. So maybe they've you know, kind of unlocked what they need from him. But, yeah, if you're asking where France get at them, I mean, France's their strengths obviously lie in their attack. You know, Olivier Giroud, much maligned by his own fans, was he booed in one of the warm-up games just before the tournament. Deschamps has stuck with him, and he does a lot of the donkey work that no one's going to give him credit for, but it allows players like Antoine Griezmann and Kylian Mbappe to flourish. So I think the physical battle between those three defenders and Giroud, if he can win more often than not, if he can make it uncomfortable for them, then yeah, I mean, the pace and the precision and, you know, the ability of Griezmann and Mbappe and you know, someone with the pace to burn of Ousmane Dembele coming on as well. That's where France are going to try and look to win the game.
It's a frightening prospect, that, isn't it?
I mean, it's semi-final is at the bare minimum. They should be winning multiple World Cups.
I remember Ian Hawkey did a preview piece during all the warm-ups, and he was talking about how frightening France looked, and then they went and lost the next game. Yeah. I think it was warm-ups or back end of the qualifiers? They're not losing 1-0 to Luxembourg.
That sounds about right.
But the point stands. Their team is frighteningly good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Belgium are no mugs. They've got plenty about them. What can they do to get at France?
Well, again, the Uruguay game didn't really tell us anything about the French defence that we didn't already know. It wasn't really tested. But, you know, if you're looking at weaknesses in them teams, I guess you look at the fullback areas, you know, purely because Pavard and Hernandez are, you know, relatively inexperienced at this level. So, another interesting choice that Martinez made for the Brazil game is bringing in Nasser Chadli as left wing back ahead of Carrasco, which is a pretty big call. I mean, I know Chadli scored the winner against Japan in the previous game, but I mean, yeah, Carrasco is some player.
Yeah.
Really, really is. So, I mean, to make that call, and again, Chadli played as well as anyone in that game, did the job that was asked for him. So, yeah, I guess the wide areas, I think Meunier is suspended for this game, isn't he? So it's going to be interesting who's going to fill the right-back slot. I guess there's a chance Carrasco comes back on the left, Chadli moves to the right. Maybe that's a switch that he's looking at. But, yeah, again, you're always looking for weaknesses in teams, aren't you? And that is an obvious area, not so much in their performances, but the fact that they are inexperienced at this level, that could be an area to exploit. And when you've got a player like Hazard who just looks on fire in this tournament, you know, we were talking about standouts. I mean, where do you stop with Belgium? I mean, that front three, and I think you can throw in Fellaini as well. Yeah, they're top players, and you know, given the chance to exploit that space in between fullback and centre back, I'm sure that's an area they are targeting.
Go on then, Steve. You said before the quarterfinals that you had a feeling for Belgium. Are you sticking with that?
I am. They passed the ultimate test of coming through against Brazil in tournament football. Again, as I said on the last podcast, they've shown me everything you need for a tournament team to go on and win. Goals galore, world-class players all over the pitch. Character, resilience, that little bit of luck that they needed against Japan. So, yeah, I think this is where France's journey ends.
Interesting. Right.
Yourself? Come on, because I'm 3-1 up.
I disputed every single one of your predictions last time, apart from England. That's the only one that came in. It's a tough one to call. I think it'll be close, and I don't think it'll be that free scoring. It's a semi-final of a World Cup. There's too much at stake. I think there'll be a lot of cancelling each other out. I think it could go to extra time, maybe even penalties.
Yeah.
And then at that point, who knows? But I think it'll be extremely close. I'm going to fence it on this one.
Good. Yeah. Pull the splinter out.
Exactly. Wednesday's semi-final, where obviously the eventual champions lie, either Croatia or England.
We've always said that, exactly. That side of the draw.
Exactly, diehard Croatia fan. Same again, Steve. What do you make of this lineup, of this matchup rather? Croatia looked like the team to beat at the group stages after their win over Argentina. It's been pretty stuttering stuff throughout the knockout phases. I mean, they dominated Russia, but still didn't do enough to win the game in 120 minutes. Whereas England looked pretty efficient against a Sweden team who had impressed most of the tournament, albeit not with fireworks, but have done well to get as far as they did. What's your hunch for this one, or what's your kind of educated analysis telling you about this?
First time it's been called that. Well, let's start with England first, because, I mean, obviously, you know, the euphoria of winning a penalty shootout at a World Cup against Colombia. You know, the nation's on a high, the players are on a high, and, you know, I think there was always this sense that our hardest game was out the way, that Sweden were not on the level of Colombia. Obviously, they'd done fantastically well to get to the quarterfinals, but I'm sure if you asked many a Swede, they would say, you know, that was as far, maybe even further than they thought they could have gone, especially coming out of a group containing Germany. But I mean, against Sweden, you know, we discussed it before the game, didn't we, that, you know, it was going to be ugly, it was going to be patchy, it was going to be long periods of frustration. England just had to be patient, move the ball around. You know, Sweden would be rigid, wouldn't leave too many gaps, and England did that. You know, it was a pretty scrappy opening 20 minutes, but I always thought during the game that England were just assessing, you know, trying to sniff Sweden out, and it was pretty obvious that Sweden weren't going to come onto them. And with teams like Sweden, you know, when you score the first goal, you can largely guarantee you're going to go on to win the game. You know, Sweden don't have a great record of comebacks in tournament football. So once England had done that, and again, they were by far the better team. I thought they played fantastically well. The players just keep on impressing me. I know Harry Maguire is still one of my favourite human beings on the planet after scoring, but I mean, Kieran Trippier, I think his World Cup is up there with anyone. I think when you're talking about contenders, he's up there. Just the width he offers, the precision and the quality of his balls. I was reading a stat that no one has delivered more crosses into the box than Neymar and Isco. But it was almost said as a kind of negative, like almost like they thought Trippier was wasting balls. But that's certainly not the case. I mean, that has been an area of strength for England at this World Cup. And Ashley Young, obviously on the other side, you know, is has tremendous quality on the ball as well in terms of his delivery. So you know, England thoroughly deserved that win. They were never really troubled. And against this Croatia side, again, I'm still of the same opinion that they peaked in the group stages. That the win against Argentina, I think, masked what is a very average Croatia team. There was nothing they did against Russia. I'd tell you what my point was, and again, we touched on it against Denmark. I thought Zlatko Dalic was really slow to react to what was quite an obvious problem on the pitch. The Denmark made one change, pushed their fullbacks further forward, and it just threw Croatia off their game. And obviously not just pinning it all on him. The players have got to take their share of the blame. And I found that largely against Russia as well. I think Russia had really good success down their right, Croatia's left. And I know the Croatian left back, whose name is Kayser now, is kind of always made a scapegoat. He's like Croatia's Raheem Sterling for any poor performances, but he was left massively exposed by Perisic in front of him. And again, you know, is it the players not reacting to the danger, or is it the coach not changing the formation to deal with that? And again, they had to rely on penalties. I mean, Ivan Rakitic has got nerves of steel, eh? Both games deciding penalty, and you never doubted him for a second. But, you know, I've only highlighted their faults at the moment. Obviously, they're packed with talent. I think they've got the best centre midfield pairing on the planet in Rakitic and Modric. But yeah, for me, they've already peaked. I don't think England need to go into this game feeling inferior to Croatia. I think this is, again, a winnable game. You know, I think if we're going to put them on the level, yes, above Sweden, above Colombia? I don't think so. I think they're about the same level, and I think England dominated that game as well.
Tactics-wise, from England's perspective, more of the same. Balls into the box, set pieces. Is that where they'll find a lot of success? I mean, Dejan Lovren's had a pretty good tournament, and he is a good centre-half, but him and like the rest of the Liverpool back line are susceptible to the high ball and crosses and set pieces and corners. Again, England will be targeting that area as a place that they can get a lot of success.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Russia's equaliser for the second goal. I've never seen a lineup like that. I mean, I know teams play such a high line now. You know, there's I wonder if they encroach on the 10-yard rule sometimes, the way they push up. But Croatia set up with two defensive lines inside their own area. It was crazy. Like, I was watching the game thinking, there's a goal here. The Russian players are allowed to play in between that line. And all it took was one ball of quality, middle of the box, Fernandez running between the lines to head that ball away. And again, it seems crazy. I mean, it could have been down to player tiredness, I don't know. But it seems crazy that Lovren, the leader of that defence, wasn't screaming at them to get in one line, either to push up as one or back as one, or that Dalic or the Croatian defensive coaches have told them to line up like that. It just seems baffling. Like, that was a goal that didn't need to be conceded. That game didn't need to go to penalties. And again, it could be down to tiredness. They obviously went to extra time and penalties in their previous game. But yeah, it's definitely an area that needs addressing for Croatia, because that's an area England are going to target them in. And with Maguire, John Stones obviously was on the score sheet twice in the win over Panama. It's a real area of strength. And when you've got people like Trippier and Young that can put it on their head pretty much, you know, you talk about delivering it into a dangerous area. They can put it on a sixpence, to coin an old English phrase. So yeah, it's definitely an area Croatia are really going to have to address and be aware of.
Well, get your thoughts on Raheem Sterling briefly, Steve, because again, he's, as well as England have done, he hasn't escaped criticism, has he?
He never does.
Yeah, from fans, from keyboard warriors, and from sections of the media. But there have been a slight kind of changing of the tide in terms of people starting to appreciate what he does do to the team and what he does bring. Now, I'm not as ardent a critic as
I can see you saying this with gritted teeth.
In terms of, I do understand what he does bring to the team, and there is a role there, but I still think he is too wasteful and he should be more dangerous than he is. But I do, so I'm not completely extreme with the criticism, but I still don't feel that in the role that he has, that he should be more dangerous. But what's your take on all this?
Yeah, I take on board what you're saying. I mean, he should have had a goal to his name in the Sweden game. But in terms of his role in the team, I mean, as you know, Harry Kane has been superb in this tournament as well. But he can't do what Sterling does. He can't stretch a defence. You only had to look at the panic on Granqvist's face every time Sterling ran into the channel, the kind of panic clearances or you know, the sheer worry and grief to get to the ball first. And that's what Sterling does. You know, more often than not, a ball in behind the defence is what kills a team. And Sterling is the only, or I say the only, he's the most capable of doing that to a defence. And yeah, he's wasteful. I don't believe for one Sterling, Raheem Sterling walked off the pitch and says, "Oh no, I was right. I shouldn't have scored that goal. You know, it was a good save, or I should have passed I shouldn't have passed the Dele Alli." Don't believe that for 1 second. Sterling knows that he should have been on the score sheet in that game, but he is the one England player who carries that threat. Marcus Rashford maybe, but I don't see the merits necessarily of playing them both together off of Kane. I think one of them as an impact sub is a really good tactical choice,
and one of them with Jesse Lingard in the team as well, who I think has had a good tournament as well. He's quietly gone about his business.
He really has supplied the ball for Dele Alli's header as well. Yeah, he's really impressed me. Again, you know, touched on Lukaku's improvement under Mourinho. I think you can definitely say that about Jesse Lingard this season as well. Doesn't get the plaudits like Sterling and Dele Alli, I suppose, to a lesser degree, but he's been one of England's most important players. You know, It sounds like I'm completely and utterly on the England bandwagon, and there's no faults. There isn't. You know, there's plenty that can be done on the ball. You know, too many times they've been caught in possession in stupid areas.
So yeah, let's talk about that in terms of what, because there's plenty of ways of, we've just said that how England can get at Croatia, but where are Croatia going to try and target England to try and get through to the final? Is it a case of trying to get Modric and Rakitic on the ball and try and control the midfield as much as possible? Because that's clearly where their star power lies.
Yeah, totally. I think Modric has looked at his best in this tournament playing as a number 10, just a little bit ahead of Rakitic. And again, I sound like I've really got it in for Dalic. I haven't, but just when Croatia are not at their best, it just seems to be when those two are playing square, playing a little bit flat and a little bit deeper than they should do. But I mean, in terms of where Croatia can draw strength, it's in trying to ruffle the England rear guard as well. Now, Mario Mandzukic is, you know, a bit of a Olivier Giroud figure for me. You know, he doesn't really get the plaudits, doesn't do a great deal that looks aesthetically pleasing on the eye. But any joy they're going to have is going to have to be players buzzing around him, the likes of Perisic, the likes of Rakitic and the likes of Modric. And Rebic as well. I think when Croatia have been great, it's been those four players being in proximity to Mandzukic. In the Denmark game, the furthest two of those, Rebic and Perisic, dropped too deep to deal with the fullback situation. And Modric and Rakitic were virtually playing as two extra centre-backs in that game. So if they want to upset England's rhythm, that's where they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to get four or five advanced players in close proximity to Mandzukic, trying to feed off the scraps. And you know, asking a few questions of John Stones, maybe, whether he likes the kind of physical battle, whether he likes, you know, being a striker playing right up against him as opposed to the play being in front of him. So that's an area where I think they'll target England.
And but you think England will go through?
I do. I think England are going through. I've not changed my opinion. I've only been more and more impressed with their performances and less impressed with Croatia's. So, yeah, it'd be folly of me to not back them now.
Inside 90 minutes?
Oh, good question. No, I think these two games have got drama galore in them. It wouldn't surprise me if one, if not both, go to penalty shootouts.
Hmm. Yeah, well, England have got that nailed down now.
Well, exactly.
So we could just go with another one.
But I mean, what are your thoughts on it? I mean, you know, there's obviously, you back Russia to beat Croatia in the last game, which obviously means you didn't fancy Croatia being pegged as these kind of dark horses.
No, and because I took on board what you were saying last time as well about them peaking in the group stage, and I think you're right there. And as much of the ball that Croatia did have against Russia, and as dangerous as they looked, Russia always threatened on the break.
Yep.
And they kind of, it was just a bit of a lack of quality in terms of being able to, I mean, of course, they took it to extra time and penalties, but Croatia always felt
they're
in control.
The taking.
Yeah, Croatia looked like they had control of the match despite being taken to penalties, but Russia did threaten. And they are a cut below what England can offer. So I think England will take care of them. I think that might be inside 90 minutes. But again, it'll be close. Harry Maguire header, obviously.
Obviously.
That should be it.
Yeah.
Well, one of the key subplots to both, with the remaining matches, Steve, is the race for the Golden Boot. Of course, the play of the tournament's already been wrapped up by Harry Maguire. So in terms of the Golden Boot, we could have, well, potentially Harry Kane on one side, England's captain and centre-forward, up against probably his main contenders for the Golden Boot. Of course, Lukaku trails in by a goal, is it?
Yep, Kane on five, Lukaku four, Mbappe on three.
So there could be a little individual kind of battle going on in the final. Of course, what's going to happen now is Croatia are going to go through. It's going to be completely erroneous. But, I mean, that could be quite interesting. I mean, the way it is now, how cagey these latter stage games go in the World Cup. Not expecting any hat-tricks at this point, so it does look like Kane's to lose, but something, another extra little kind of subplot to kind of keep an eye out for.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and again, I think these are, if you look at Lukaku and Belgium's lineup in the group stage, I mean, you know, I thought he could easily have five goals by the time they even got to the knockouts. He's on four. He's not scored in the knockout rounds, but yeah, that's not taken away from his performances, and it's not like other players haven't stepped up to the plate. Again, Mbappe, quiet against Uruguay, but the way he tore Argentina apart, you know, it sounds like giving a shoeing to Argentina. He could quite easily do that to any team he comes up against. You know, it's the ability to ghost past even the quickest defenders. It must be great to call upon. I mean, Didier Deschamps just thinking, right, okay, if it's not happening for Mbappe, I'll bring, you know, another 100 million euro sprinter in Ousmane Dembele on. So it'd be great. I mean, it you know, for obvious reasons for me and you, it'd be great if England gets to the World Cup. But it would be great if the subplot was showdown between, you know, if Lukaku is to score against France, then they would both be on five, assuming Harry Kane doesn't score against Croatia. So that would be great.
There's quite a few variables in there, isn't there?
Well, yeah, there's plenty, isn't there? But I mean, you know, it shouldn't be mistaken that three of the four teams left in it have the three top goal scorers in the tournament.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And all, I mean, of course, centre forwards are generally going to be your top scorers, but when there's only three, four, five goals, it could be any position. It clearly means that systems are working, strategies are working to be able to feed your centre forward. I mean, albeit Kane's only scored one deflected goal from open play, is it? Oh, no, and then the header that came in, but mainly set pieces. But again, as we've touched on before, it's a strategy that's working for England, so crack on.
Yeah, no, and I've just actually realised Harry Kane has six goals in this tournament, doesn't he? So Lukaku's actually four behind him, so he does have a bit of catching up to do. Two behind him, yeah. So, but I mean, you look at that Belgium and France game, I mean, it wouldn't surprise you to see both Mbappe and Lukaku on the score sheet. I mean, that one is really, really hard to pull apart in terms of separating those two. But yeah, I mean, it's great. It's been a great tournament, full of goals. I mean, I don't know what it's on record to finish as, but I mean, it's certainly been such an entertaining tournament so far, and the quality of goals that we've seen from unlikely sources as well has just added to the brilliance of it.
So just to wrap up, we've got, you're going for a England Belgium final.
I am.
It's gonna be a very Premier League heavy final, isn't it?
Well, it is, wouldn't it? And again, I guess that's one of the other interesting subplots, that if that is the final, and you know, there's plenty of French players who play in the Premier League or have played in the Premier League, but it's certainly, if it's Belgium and England, I mean, those two sets of players know each other's games so well. I mean, you know, I think you scrub out the group game almost, don't you? Two second teams playing against each other.
Yeah, for nothing.
Yeah, and you know, a 1-0 victory, it's almost irrelevant, that game.
If it was Belgium, England, how many Man City players would be playing?
Who would we have? De Bruyne, Kompany, Dembele on the bench, Kyle Walker, John Stones, Raheem Sterling. Am I missing any? No, I think that would be it. That would be plenty, wouldn't it?
That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, and after the fantastic season they had, I don't think it's any surprise that they're supplying a good chunk of players in the latter stages of the World Cup.
Interesting. Well, I think
only Leroy Sané had been picked by Germany.
Yeah, exactly. I think France will edge Belgium in the semi-finals, but.
So you're predicting France-England?
France-England.
I'm predicting Belgium-England.
And then we'll get on to our predictions for the final when it comes to it.
Okay.
Steve, thanks very much for popping in the studio this week and sharing your analysis and thoughts.
Pleasure.
Well, that's all we have time for this week. You can find the Extra Time podcast on Apple Podcasts and on the National website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.